Siren Radio.
Fantastic. The whole world is rejoicing, and presumably in Gibraltar, the fact that Westlife are getting back together. I mean, cause for great celebrations, if not a national holiday, I would have thought.
Yeah, I was actually quite surprised that was on the Sky News Bulletin, that very end. Yeah, and finally, yeah. Westlife are here.
Can we ever be surprised by anything that our colleagues and friends at Sky News actually put together? I ask you. Okay, this is something that Sky doesn't offer because it's an exclusive contract that we actually have for the Midweek Drive Morning Edition from your good self, Gabriella. The weather for Lincoln from Gibraltar.
Okay, so the weather for Lincoln today is highs of 17 degrees Celsius, lows of 11 degrees Celsius. It will be a day of light cloud with a moderate breeze.
Live from Gibraltar, with or without her faithful friend Frodo, it's time for Gabriella Peralta on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
Since last week, Emma, have you considered saying to the rest of the family, it's time we actually took a holiday in Gibraltar, possibly for the Gibraltarian Literary Festival?
Well, my dad knows how bad I am at geography, so he wasn't surprised when I told him that.
It was a wonderful description from Gabriella in terms of exactly where Gibraltar is centrally based, sorted through, with monkeys and more. That's the important thing. And an upcoming literary festival, Gabriella, in which I've already started paving the way by ensuring that Johnny Ball, think of a number man, is well aware of your presence on the rock. So there we are.
Yeah, thank you. I hope to see him. I'll be at the Literary Festival throughout the whole time, so hopefully I do get to see him.
We have just come out of the Lincolnshire Literary Festival. I say we. Actually, Ben was doing fantastic duties, as indeed were the Signet PR crew, with Ian Richards and indeed Phil Hamlin-Williams, who's coming to the programme on Wednesday's Midweek Drive, which is good stuff. Ben, what were your thoughts on the Lincoln Literary Festival? You can actually reflect on it before we actually head off to the Gibraltarian Literary Festival.
Yeah, it's actually really interesting. I think some of the guests that I perhaps wouldn't have gone to see personally, actually I really enjoyed them, and they're very engaging with an audience. And what I quite enjoyed actually overall was seeing the different age groups involved in the audience and coming to the guest talk. So there'd be people as young as sort of, you know, 5 or 6, right up until sort of 70s, 80s. And, you know, but it was a really enjoyable, event, the whole week was. And, I unfortunately didn't get to see Michael Morpurgo. But
that is because you were taking one for the team, you were in the Midweek Drive, you were doing the Wednesday show.
Exactly.
And you had to say, Michael, I'd love to go, my son. I really like War Horse.
Priorities, Alex, isn't it?
I've got another War Horse I've got to look after, so that's the bottom line. You know,
I looked at the images that Ian, my colleague there, took of, and it looked brilliant. The crowd absolutely amazing, and I had really positive feedback from the event. So, overall, I think it went really, really well.
Splendid. And between the 15th and the 18th of November, I'm sure, actually, if you'd like to fly Ben over to Gibraltar, he could actually add his skills and sets to the Gibraltar International Literary Festival as well. Does the build-up start now? And as we look at the speakers that we come through here, I see Angus Roxburgh is there, Alison Gardner, Adrian Lucas, Caroline Langrish is around, Christian Oxenberg, Christopher Lloyd, not the Christopher Lloyd from Back to the Future.
Comes every year. Christopher Lloyd,
And not the one from Back to the Future. He just keeps coming back to it.
No.
David Reynolds, Alex Menes, Bethany Hughes, Pookie Knightsmith, made up name.
Yeah, she's come before. I love her name.
Exactly. Don't be Suki, it's Pookie. James Pembroke, Johnny Ball is here, of course, and as I will hear from Johnny later, who is also looking forward to this whole side of things. And he has some very interesting things to say about higher education, including the fact that apparently his daughter Zoe and himself sometimes over not coming to university. It's not too late. I mean, Johnny's got a degree from, an honorary degree from Bishop Grotest. I think it's the name. It's another institution within Lincoln. So I said, we can coordinate that, Johnny. Don't worry. We'll get something sorted out from that point of view. Never too late. Anyway, what are you most looking forward to about the Literary Festival yourself, Gabriella? Because you are our girl on the spot.
Oh, I don't know. I wouldn't be able to pick. And you know what? As Ben was saying, there are some that... because a lot of the times I don't particularly choose who to go to. I get assigned. So what we do is we let our contributors take the first picks because they're doing it, from their own back. Mm-hmm. And then staff, we get assigned. And there's been in the past ones that I've been like, oh, I've never heard of these people. But they've probably given the best talks. So I'm just looking forward to seeing what I get.
It's like,
and
exactly.
I do get a little bit of a say of what I want. I think last year I saw Kate Ady, so I want to see her, so I got to see her. But yeah, it's really whatever comes my way.
Whatever magical things emerges, it's wonderful.
Yeah,
Emma, of course.
But they are enjoyable.
You had the chance to be also at Michael Moore Pogo, but once again, sadly, Michael was disappointed.
Still.
He was gutted.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, the line I got from Michael Moore Pogo was, he said, look, I can cope with Ben not being here. But if Emma's not around as well...
I know.
No representative.
Exactly. However, are you a literary festival girl, Emma? I mean, is this something you sort of think about? I mean, because obviously they've been blossoming gradually over the years from that point of view. Have you ever considered going to one? What's your thoughts on the whole thing?
Oh yeah, I mean, I love books. I have a book blog. I read a lot of books each year. I think I'm on 40 something books at the moment. But
simultaneously?
I'm not.
You know, you've got 168 hours in the week, so I would have thought you could actually squeeze in a few other bits and pieces on the system. Yeah. And Gabriella, from your own point of view, are you an avid reader? Are you a voracious reader? I mean, one of the things Johnny sort of mentions, spoiler alert here, is the fact that actually reading is the best way to chill out. Reading is the best way to unwind. And yet, even when we go on holiday, sometimes it's difficult to find time to read.
I pretty much mainly just read the news now.
Just read the news.
Yeah.
Well, that's good though for her job. Yeah, I think that's position to be in.
It sounds awful, but I don't read anymore for enjoyment. I just read it there is all day, and then I kind of come back from work and I'm a bit fried, so I just sit there.
And speak and say, please speak to me, O Frodo. Are you conscious or unconscious? And what has been happening in your day whilst I've been busy reading the news and writing it as well, of course.
Yeah.
State of consciousness of Frodo this morning is?
Awake. He's had his breakfast. He's had a treat, which he's gobbled down, and then he's run to another room. So
He's just on fire. He's just literally, he's cooking with gas. He's realised that,
Some mornings you can't drag him out of bed, and this morning he's ready to eat, ready to have a treat. He's just out.
He knows that Stephanie Romaszewski is joining us in a few seconds. That's probably what it is. It gets everybody very excited. We'll find out what the street hens are actually called. Street hens. There's definitely got to be some kind of band that you can actually have on.
Sounds like some sort of tribute act.
Yeah, exactly. We'll find out more. Are those the only livestock you've actually got in your household?
No,
no other pets or animals? No.
I've got a dog, Milo.
Milo.
Boston Terrier.
Boston Terrier. Yeah. Hey.
Suits the location.
Thinking Milo, the Boston Terrier from Lincolnshire. And of course, Frodo, the Gibraltarian pug. Frodo, I'm just thinking an international connection here, Gabriella. Just a thought. He's gone very quiet. Well,
I'm
Ben.
Not too sure. I do like Boston Terriers, though.
Yeah,
so I'm sure.
Yeah. Does he have his own Facebook page?
Does he have an Instagram?
No. You're one step behind.
So no Instagram and no Facebook for Milo. Have to work on that.
I will. Yeah.
Definite way forward.
We need to have Milo and Frodo. Following each other.
I'll get on that.
In a non-stalker-esque way, because clearly we wouldn't enjoy that.
Do you have a sniff option on Instagram?
Strangely enough, we'll be talking about sniffing and laundry in the near future, but now it's time for you to ask those last two questions, please, Ben.
Gabriella, have you enjoyed your 10 of Link Lips today on the show?
I have, thank you.
Good, and will you join us again next week?
Yes, hopefully next week.
Brilliant. Look forward to seeing you then.
Cue the whistles.
Everybody talks about a new world in the morning. New world in the morning, so they say. Now I myself don't talk about a new world in the morning. New world morning, that's today. And I can feel a new tomorrow coming on. And I don't know why I have to make a song. Now everybody talks about a new
since he was 20. I met that man when he was 81. He said, too many folks just stand and wait until the morning. Don't they know tomorrow never comes? And he would feel a new tomorrow coming on. And when he'd smile, his eyes would twinkle up and far. Now everybody talks about the new world in the morning. New world in the morning takes so long. And I can feel a new tomorrow coming on. And I don't know why I have to make a song. Talks about a new world in the morning. New world in the morning takes so long. La da da dee da da, la da da dee da.
Perfect, upbeat, upmarket, up-tempo, in so many ways, the perfect introductory tune to Sleepyhead Clinic's finest, Stephanie Robyshevsky. How are you, Stephanie?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Very well indeed. Despite the fact that two of these souls who said, I have so much difficulty sleeping, and in one case is actually waking up. Yes, I mean you, Becky Morgan Phillips. I haven't quite made it to the studio. However, what the hey, Ben Lewis is back with us.
Good morning, Stephanie.
Hi.
And so is Emma R. Street, who is somebody you haven't actually spoken to as yet, but literally in her second week here at the University of Lincoln. So there's newbie, fresher, etc. We won't talk about her experience at Lancaster. It's a different place. Just don't mention it. You know, choosing the right degree, the right program. That's all good from that. Emma, what's life like in the Street household? Is everybody, do you sleep perfectly soundly or sort of through on that?
We all sleep quite differently, I think. I sleep for quite a long time, but sometimes
days
here, weeks.
I could
just sleep anywhere, anytime. But my dad only sleeps for a few hours. I think he doesn't go to sleep until very late.
I'm from the department of, I just can't believe how wonderful these quotes get. Just when you think the bar has been raised, they're raised again on Sleepyhead Clinic. The words, I can't do anything about my sleep paralysis / sleep talking / weird night behaviour. Genius. Talking personally, it's a sign your sleep quality is poor, which you can do something about. Very good. Nice line on that basis. But Stephanie, from what Emma was saying there, would you say actually that's perfectly natural? Families, they obviously have, as human beings, natural differing sleeping patterns.
Yeah, I mean, we're all very different. And it's especially apparent at somewhere like university, where you start sharing houses with lots of different types of people. And everyone needs a different sleep need. So it's completely normal to sleep less hours than, say, somebody else. But we always worry about that if we're not doing what everybody else is doing, and then we start to try and change it, and that's when we start getting problems.
Yesterday at 7 a.m. the words anxiety and stress is why I can't sleep emerged. That may be, but unfortunately merely doing relaxation exercises won't fix it. In many ways, Stephanie, I feel as though you write the script for this program, just literally try doing those Facebook pastes. That's just nowhere else to go. I mean, when we come to William Sitwell and his scrambled eggs, he's got a massive mountain to climb to actually reach that kind of level. It's amazing. Ben, we've talked a bit about your sleeping habits. Any difficulties, any challenges?
Well, it's interesting to say that. I didn't sleep too well last night, funny enough. And I think the problem was, I think I was perhaps a little overtired. I was stupidly stayed up quite late. I was thinking about too much, I'd say.
After the midweek drive?
After the midweek drive.
Whoa.
Yeah, but the thing is, several things I needed to get done, and I wanted to do them. I was determined to get them done before bed, and I perhaps don't think I should have done, because I don't know, it was on my mind all night then, so I was quite restless sleep and woke up quite a few times, and I was quite tired anyway, but it was to the point where I think I was overtired that I didn't actually end up getting as much sleep as I wanted.
Do you think that did you have a little wind down after you did everything, or is it sort of a straight, you know, I've finished everything, I'm going to get myself ready, I'm going to go to bed?
Well, I did wind down. I mean, I sat and I watched, caught up in some iPlayer stuff for about half an hour, and then I thought, right, I'll call it a night then. But I didn't think that was the right thing to do. I mean, I have the book as well, but I didn't really make time for the book, which I should have replaced one for the other, I think.
Well, everybody's different. You should never be dictated to about what you actually do to wind down. Everybody's got something different. Some people be reading. Some people do need to, watch something before they go to bed. I think as long as you enjoy it and you're getting some good quality wake time out of it, that's a good thing. And as for being overtired, I guess that's true. But actually, in science, there's not really any kind of for that. We use it a lot though, and we use it as an excuse, I was overtired so I couldn't sleep. But actually, in reality, sometimes nights are just a bit different. Yeah, you're right, you did a lot that day, and maybe that affected your sleep a little bit. It's probably not going to affect your sleep tonight. You just keep your routines as usual. But I think we start worrying, don't we? I was overtired. And then people start using it as an excuse, and then it gets worse and worse and worse, and people worry that they're going to bed too late. I think it's more about having good quality wake time before you go to bed. And if whatever you're doing isn't working for you, then change it. But if you're just having the odd bad night, that is totally normal, and it's nothing to worry about, and nothing needs changing.
I mean, it's just great. It's just, you feel better just actually listening to Stephanie.
It's very reassuring.
Emma, any thoughts or comments from your own perspective?
I do have a question, actually, because I work at 6 a.m. on Fridays and Saturdays, and I know that on your Twitter page and everything, it says to try and get up at the same time every day.
Yeah.
But getting up at 4:30 to get to work at 6 on Friday and Saturday isn't then appealing for the rest of the week.
So in that kind of situation, try and keep it as consistent as possible. Maybe just keeping it as consistent as you can on the other days.
Yeah.
And it's completely up to you. That is the gold standard. So if you did that every day, eventually at 4:30, you wouldn't feel rubbish anymore. You'd be waking up and feeling really refreshed. If you don't want to do that, that's perfectly fine. But knowing that actually you're probably going to be a bit sleepy on the days that you do have to wake up early, but you don't really need to compensate for it. So don't do anything. Don't change any of your sleeping habits, like going to bed early, napping, unless you really, really feel like your body needs it. Because often what we do is put these changes in place because we think we need to, before our bodies actually tell us realistically what it wants. And that's when you start running into problems.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
I need to ask a question, Stephanie, nothing to do with sleep, but are you a scrambled egg kind of a girl, or do you avoid eggs completely?
Oh, no, I love scrambled eggs. I love all types of eggs. I'm an egg girl.
Because, again, William Sitwell, who was involved, obviously, with the hashtag scrambled eggs competition recently, with the Rose Prince cooking competition. Rose Prince's scrambled eggs, clearly we're gathering as much data as possible when he joins us. For his kind of birthday special, really, in a few moments' time. So just wanted to clarify. Any particular way you take your scrambled eggs? Are they on toast or...?
With a bit of cream and some... smoked salmon.
Very nice.
I think so. I always take this level of sophistication with Stephanie, which brings the whole thing. Not just scrambled eggs on toast, a bit of cream, bit of smoked salmon. Way forward, absolutely. We're about to reveal the names of the two hens. Oh, go on, let's reveal it now. Let's put people out of the minutes. The two hens are
Princess Leia and Hen Solo. Yeah.
Intake.
I want to know how long it took to come to it. Come to those names.
The entire street family would have been sort of gathered around. You might have involved other people from the streets to help the streets, and it would be just amazing. It's fantastic stuff.
It's a street party then, isn't it?
And actually, whilst we're dealing with furry friends we actually have at home, Stephanie, any little cats, dogs, animals, or indeed hens that you have within the Romaszewski household?
Oh, yes. I've got a cat at the moment who is very lazy and doesn't do much, but seems to be there.
When you say it doesn't do much, you don't know what's going on in its mind. I mean, let's face it, it could be astral travelling like crazy in its mind.
It could be, and like my mum always says, she's probably down the coal mines every night, and that is why she is sleeping all the time, but who knows?
Is this what we've come to in Britain now, under the current administration, that we actually send pets down the coal mines to actually fuel the country? Another Brexit challenge we're going to be faced with. Outrageous. And never mind. Ben, I think you can put those last two questions to Stephanie in your usual marvellous manner.
Stephanie, have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us today on the show?
Absolutely.
Wonderful. And will you be joining us again at some point in the near future?
Yes.
Yes, as long as you'll have me.
But let's face that, be a quick calculation, 326 hours or so from now, actually.
Very good mental maths, Alex.
Well, you know, occasionally, like, some might say it's mild autism, but what the hell, we'll just work our way through that. Who knows? Stephanie, don't forget, can be reached via Sleepyhead, via all the social media, or Sleepyhead Clinic via all the social media channels and so on and so forth. And just awesome, awesome work, Stephanie Remeshevsky. We salute you. Take care now.
Thank you.
Get brighter. Ooh, child, things are gonna get easier. Ooh, child, things will get brighter. Someday, yeah, we'll put it together and we'll get it undone. Someday, when your head is much lighter. Someday, yeah, we'll walk in the rays of a beautiful. Things will be brighter. Ooh, child, things are gonna be easier. Ooh, child, things will be brighter.
So when you haven't been observing the activities of Richard Fitzwilliam's playing ping pong, of course, Ben, you've also been monitoring his social media and such like, and what did you see him doing yesterday which you wanted to sort of reveal to the world?
Dining at the Ritz, Willie.
Dining at the Ritz in his own marvellous way.
A bit of lunch on.
A royal commentator, film critic, public relations consultant, and of course regular contributor to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. Richard Fitzwilliams, welcome back to the programme. How are you?
Oh, well, I'm very well, yes, indeed. It was very enjoyable, and I have to say that the interior of the Ritz, I mean, I haven't frankly dined there a very long time ago, because my grandmother was American, and some of her relations were staying there, and they entertained rather lavishly. But it's rather like one of those glorious French palaces that they open up for their very special weekend in September, where you can go around the ministries, the Elysee, the Quai d'Orsay, Parliament, and so forth. And it really is magnificent. I mean, it's a traveler's club in New York is something that I'd also mention for sheer splendor. And also, the Traveller's Club in London has got a wonderful series of blazing chandeliers reflected in its mirror. But the Ritz is very special. It should be. And it certainly they produce beautiful food.
It enables us to put on the glitz, and we'll talk with William Sitwell about probably the Ritz as well. However, it's fair to say that, as I was reminded of last night, it's far too long since we actually did a Fitzwilliam's Leftuke on location report.
Such fun if we could do that, if you were down. Yes, it would indeed.
Well, I think, you know, also given the fact that neither Ben Lewis or indeed Emma Street have as yet...
We haven't met.
This is it, you see. So I think we need to give that a bit of a priority, because I was talking with Ed Wellman last night, and we were reminded of people like Emma Tinson and of course, Graham Harper and Tessa Snart, who sends her best, of course. And we thought...
Reciprocate, please. And there are all sorts of venues. There's, of course, the Film Festival Week, and of course... But then that's... That is a terribly busy one for me. But
we will get some
table tennis in Soho Square.
There is that, Ben, but I think we might have to just hold fire momentarily on that. I'd also introduce to you, Richard, before we start off on the thoughts today, to Emma R. Street, who is just 1.5 weeks into her public relations degree here at the University of Lincoln.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
There we are, you see. Where do you wish to go, Richard, given that I know you're devastated that Phil Dennis has gone to bed after a very long day? He did say last night at the end of the show he was going to try, but this morning at 6:30 he said he tried and failed.
Well, so. That's what the screenwriter of The Wife, in fact, a very good description of what happened in that movie. I think I'll start there. I ought to start following the Ritz with Crazy Rich Asians, because the one, undoubtedly, luxury follows the other. But I'm starting with The Wife because we are constantly told that Glenn Close is lined up after all her previous nominations didn't succeed for an Oscar for this. Now, what I want to concentrate on is it as a film. It's directed by someone called Bjorn Runge, who I had never heard of, and it had immense potential. Jonathan Pryce plays Joe Castleman, and early in the movie, we hear he's won the Nobel Prize for Literature. Glenn Close is his wife, Joan. Devoted, perhaps, but you can just see there's a frisson in the early scene of intercourse. There's little doubt that I have a pretty good idea of the way it's going to develop, but not the absurd way it actually does develop, and that is with due respect to the two principals. Here's the plot. Joe hasn't written the novels that have won the prize that are supposed to be so good. It's, in fact, Joan who's written them. So it's all fraudulent, but no one knows. Now, allowing for this device to liven, as it were, the story up, they head for Sweden. But this is somebody who's got away with it for years. He's in his probably late 70s. He doesn't even know the names of his characters. Since he's fated
by... Didn't Shakespeare do the same, wasn't it? Or his wife who did all the work for him? Wasn't that the bottom line, really? Isn't there a precedent here?
It was the wife who was left the second best bed. It could be... This was the Mark Rylance was teased by Andrew Marr on the Upstart Crow clip that they showed on Marr on Sunday. Rylance and others do believe that Shakespeare didn't, and, you know, the Marlowe or... Earl of Oxford.
Let's not start turning over those old stones, Richard. Let's move back to Glenn Close.
Back to Joe, because you see, he's fated by literary lions, but he hasn't even got the ability to judge a literary effort by his unfortunate son, who hates him because he believes he's being ignored by him, but who's also unwisely asked to accompany them to Stockholm, where he's going to win the prize. Now, there are flashbacks in this movie, and they are perhaps the worst flashbacks I've seen for a very long time. Because, you see, Joe and Joan were lovers when they were young in 1958. I am specific for a reason. This film is set in 1992. Now, they were in their 20s, I'd say, in the late 50s. Now they're in their 70s. So they've never had middle age, or they've only had some of it. It's a ridiculous ridiculous mistake of the movie is just playing with age because it thinks it can adapt the...
Richard, age is just an illusion in any case. You've got Christian Slater, you've got Glenn Close. They're probably just teenagers in any case.
Well, they were in their 20s, and she actually is dared as his student, because he's a professor, to criticize his work, and he was absolutely furious. But this is when they were young. The thing is, the scenes are so badly written. I mean, this person who writes so badly, and she says so, and she then offers to rewrite. But he's so vile, he's so nasty, and he's so unconvincing. I mean, this is the trouble. The movie simply doesn't convince. When also, now there, this is a spoiler alert, I suppose, but it's not really. Whenever you see an elderly man take pills and become out of breath, in a movie, you know what's going to happen.
Could it visibly be
they weren't blue, were they, Richard?
No, I'm thinking coronary thrombosis, actually.
I mean,
those little
well
blue pills, I don't know where you're going with that, Ben, but please step away from it.
I thought that would be too puzzling for you to follow. and also, this is a guy who goes after every woman in creation. Everyone who he thinks attractive. So, in fact, when the...
Hashtag
Nobel,
not me too.
It's certainly not so far as he's concerned. But when a photographer is detailed, a young female photographer is detailed by the Nobel people to film him, photograph him, of course you can imagine what's going to happen there, which it duly does. There are so many clichés in this fatuous load of piffle. I mean, the couple even fight during the Nobel banquet. He throws the Nobel medallion out of his car, which is an extraordinarily weird thing to do, though in the circumstances, since he doesn't deserve it and hasn't ever written anything, you can just see why he mightn't value it in that respect. But also, Christian Slater, you mentioned. Now, here's just an example of why this film is so empty. He plays a hack journalist who's wants to write a book about Joe, and he suspects that there are some weird ups and downs in his life, but he's more or less concentrating on the affairs. He doesn't realize, of course, that he's a fraud. Well, firstly, he's on the same plane going over. That's possible. Then he's able to get an interview with the wife, who obviously detests the husband but doesn't directly betray him. The angry son has no such reservations, and then this is ridiculous. In the actual Nobel ceremony, in white tie, the journalist is actually seated behind him. Now that really wouldn't happen. They were
Richard,
moving.
In all the years we've been doing these programs, I've never heard you use the phrase "a fatuous load of total piffle." But today, obviously, we've reached that particular stage, and what can I say? I mean, the reviews have been mixed, shall we say? But let's...
Well, they've been generally pretty favourable. I mean, I haven't come to the performances, which, of course, I obviously must do. Glenn Close is a remarkably fine actress, and...
Is she unreadably brilliant, as The Guardian would put it? Unreadably brilliant.
Yes, it's interesting, because her passions are smouldering. And she does that very well throughout the role, because, in fact, it isn't clear what she's really thinking until quite a way into the movie. And then the way her passions actually rise to the surface, and they unforgettably do, is indeed impressive. It is a very fine performance. I suppose you could almost say luminous performance. It's understated. No bunny boilers here, or you certainly wouldn't have...
That was Fatal Attraction, Richard. That was Michael Douglas and Glenn Close in another
era. You're
era.
Kind enough of you to remind me, but I was just going to say that when they were young, since he was so abysmal, you certainly wouldn't have blamed her if she'd taken it out on some pet of his, or because I mean, this is a movie which is linked. It's Hollywood. Jonathan Pryce, I don't doubt, enjoyed tremendously hamming it up because I mean the character's just really stupid. No such person after having decades in the literary world, even if he didn't have the talent to write precisely what he did, would be as ignorant of his field as he is. And I mean, well, all you've got is...
on a day where we've been teasing ahead to the Gibraltar Literary Festival, and of course we were looking back at the Lincoln Literary Festival, hopefully all of the authors who took part actually wrote their own work. That's all I can say.
I have to join you in that feeling. Yeah.
Let's move on. Emma, your first real challenge here on the basis of Richard's review and, of course, looking at the trailer in the studio. Will The Good Wife be on your list of must-see movies?
The Wife, by the way, not good.
Thank you. Thank you. You're quite right.
she was good. Exactly. The husband wasn't.
Literally just The Wife, not to be confused with
good.
The TV
series. She participated in a fraud.
Yeah. That's very true.
So, exactly. No, but they couldn't say The Bad Wife because obviously The Good Wife is a TV series. So would you be going to see
That's
The
Good
Wife?
Life, isn't it?
Yeah, I might go see it, but not with high expectations, probably.
There we are. Not, might go and see it, but not with high expectations. Ben?
The reviews are actually really quite good. I think I'd give it a chance. I'd give it a chance, but I don't think it's very promising from Richard's review of what to expect. Mm.
Well, as we said last night, we were speaking to the wonderful Nobu Su, who is a multimillionaire Asian business operator who's suing the banks and going very much for, of course, Richard's favourite Sir Fred Goodwin of the Bank of Scotland, who I know Richard always thinks very highly of. Not.
That's outrageous. Lie, yes. Of course.
Don't take the bait, Richard. Don't take the bait.
I must say, that's just probably the most scandalous calumny Alex has ever it really is extraordinary. The fact it took so long for him to lose his knighthood, I mean, the honour system finally, as it were, been jerked out of its complacency on this sort of issue. The reason being that it has in its remit, this is the Honours Forfeiture Committee, it has in its remit the ability to, the powers to remove any honour whereby it's felt that the person brings the honour system into disrepute, as well as if you're imprisoned over a certain period, and treason. It was usually the latter two, and there were very, very few that were removed.
He didn't realise in 2008 it was going to lead to all of this hassle and kerfuffle, I'm sure.
I think that you could say it was a little more than hassle and kerfuffle, but of course...
Just to underplay, yeah.
The euphemism.
Meanwhile, as opposed to moonwhile, if you are following native New Yorker Rachel Chu accompanying your long-term boyfriend Nick Young to your best friend's wedding in Singapore, you might be a little bit excited. Maybe crazy and rich and Asian.
Well, yes, indeed. Now, the important thing about Crazy Rich Asians, I thoroughly enjoyed. Everyone's enjoyed it. It is a bit of a fairy story, and it taps a market which is pretty wealthy too. Because I mean, this is the first film in the major Hollywood studio to feature a majority Asian American cast for 25 years, and it's a rom-com in settings that are breathtakingly spectacular. Indeed, Rachel Chu, played by Constance Wu, is an economics professor at New York State. She does indeed accept an invite from her boyfriend Nick, played by Henry Golding. Super English accent he has. I really think that his diction should be copied by a lot of English actors, some of whom slur. They go to Singapore for his best friend's wedding. She doesn't know it, but they are among the richest family in Singapore. And there she meets Nick's redoubtable mother. The performance of the film, Eleanor, is played by Michelle Yeoh, who, of course, is an old favourite of mine. And she gives an absolutely first-class performance. Expect her to be in the list of Oscar nominations. No doubt about that for supporting. She's got reserve, dignity, and a forceful presence, and she doesn't approve of Rachel. One has to say that you can have so much fun with a movie like this. It reminded me of Uncle Max's comment in The Sound of Music. I like rich people. I like the way I live.
If you can bring in Rodgers and Hammerstein as well, that almost sort of equals a fatuous load of old piffle. But
It's certainly not, because the the intention of this movie is to entertain, to dazzle, to blind.
It's crazy. It's about
it's
Asians.
Crazy. It's fun.
And it's rich.
It's visually
Ben,
super.
Will you be going to see it?
Well, it was interesting, actually. I remember watching an interview on the BBC not too long ago with, I think, the lead actor. It was Henry Golding. Because he was a news guy, wasn't he? A news reporter or something along those lines. And that's how they recruited him, because they knew one of the guys who was working on the set knew him as a friend and ended up contacting him. And actually, he was perfect for the role. I believe that was something along those lines.
Thumbs up from yourself, Ben?
Yeah, I would love to see it. I'd love to see it.
What about Emma?
Oh, yeah.
You've got weddings, parties, and spectacle. You've certainly got parties, my goodness, you have. And also, Henry Golding and Rachel Wu make a charming couple. And there'll be a sequel to this because it's done very well at the box office. These rom-coms, I mean, this is...
They just
this
go
one,
on,
it,
and on and on and on.
Well, look, this delivers. I could have had a little more script at the end, no spoilers from me, but those who see it will know what I mean. But having said that, I mean, it certainly delivers, and it delivers in style and... my goodness me, what parties.
We've had The Wife, we've had Crazy Rich Asians. We're going to have to hold it there, Richard, because we have to hold fire on A Simple Favour, possibly until next time.
I hadn't intended to have a third.
Well, that's okay, then. Very good.
No.
I don't know where that came from.
Definitely hold fire on it.
Yeah, precisely. Just whoa. Emma, would you like to put those last two questions to Richard Fitzwilliams, please? I think you graduated, yeah. I think. Go for it, my girl. Go.
Have you enjoyed your interview today?
Oh, I certainly have.
And will you be joining us again in the future?
I certainly hope so.
Well, I do like the way Emma always sort of gives a little sense of earthquake by tapping the
Sorry.
Table like that. It's where's it going? Splendid. You're a rich girl and you're gone too far, 'cause you know it don't matter anyway. You can rely on the old man's money. You can rely on the old man's money. It's a bitch, girl, but it's gone too far, 'cause you know it don't matter anyway. Say money, money won't get you too far, get you too far. So, laundry, do you sniff it, or do you actually say, can't be doing with laundry, I'm a student? It's a way of actually sorting out laundry habits. And indeed, new research has revealed that prospective students don't feel very confident about flying the nest and heading off to university, and certainly not doing their laundry. In fact, 36% of medical students only do laundry when their clothes look dirty, which is a little bit worrying. So to address this particular aspect, we're delighted to welcome two wonderfully fine and indeed completely clean individuals, the awesome Hannah Morrish from the UK's biggest university community, the Student Room. How are you, Hannah?
Very well, thank you.
And the equally wonderful and immaculately turned out Rachel Green, who of course leads the student engagement programme at SPURF. How are you, Rachel?
Very good, thank you, Alex. How are you?
Excellent. Now, I'm glad to see I put on clean underpants, everything for this particular piece, because it works so importantly on radio. Rachel, were you surprised by this study? I mean, that number about medical students, I must admit, I thought, whoa, have they not heard of disease prevention and such like?
Do you know what? So there were parts of the study that were a little bit surprising, but a lot of it we weren't hugely, hugely shocked by. So the fact that a lot of students are feeling unprepared when they go to university, that's completely normal. This is a really exciting time in your life. You're about to leave home maybe for the first time, move away from your friends and your family. It's completely natural that you might have a few nerves about that. But it should be a really exciting time. And what we want to do is help people focus on the exciting aspects of moving away to university and not have to worry about the slightly more boring tasks like doing their laundry by giving them all the hints and tips that they need to do to get it done and out the way and just get on with, you know, attending all of their lectures and maybe a few nights out with the Freshers Week. And that's why we've set up our student hub on Cleanopedia. So if you search Cleanopedia Surf Students, you'll be taken to a website with loads of hints and tips about how to do your laundry quickly and easily and also quite cheaply when you're at university.
Well, very impressed with that and the name as well, Cleanopedia. We turn to Hannah from your perspective as well, because traditionally, back in the 20th century, I seem to recall that actually a reading week or midterm at etc. was the traditional time where lots of students across the country would actually go heading back home with bags and bags of laundry, and it would be done for them at home. They'd come back. So has that changed? I mean, certainly looking at the East Midlands, finding that 25 years of age is pretty much the time where parents will no longer be doing their laundry for children, whereas the rest of the country seems to be about 22. Are these sort of significant shifts we're seeing in terms of habits, Hannah?
Gosh, you've really brought back some memories there about reading week. I used to have reading week, I remember.
Yeah.
Did I go home and take my washing? I'm not sure if I did, because I really loved uni and I was in Birmingham and Brighton seemed too far away. But I think I had friends, and there are still plenty of students out there that will take their laundry home for their folks. So they've got to survive, what is it, 5 or 6 weeks? Maybe with the Smith method, or maybe, you know, brave the laundrette and make sure that they're going down there with their mates, perhaps. Or maybe, I mean, I remember using my bathroom sink to do some washing when I was really desperate and I couldn't face kind of going down to the dreary laundrette on campus.
48% of women apparently more likely than men to use the sniff method, with only 31% of men doing that. Maybe it's because it's something to do with olfactory skills and such like.
Or maybe just women, you know, being a bit more strategic about when they do their washing and how often. Who knows? It's interesting. Rachel, what do you think about that?
So I actually think, and I know this is a bit of a strange thing to say when I work on laundry detergent, that the sniff method is not the worst way that you can find out if you need to do your laundry. If you've worn a T-shirt for a couple of hours to some lectures and then, you know, you've come back and you're just chilling in your room in halls, you're probably not dirty enough to really warrant doing a full load of laundry, and you can probably get away with wearing that T-shirt one more time, especially if you're using a detergent with a really strong fragrance that lasts for a long time. As long as you still smell okay and you don't have any visible stains on it, there's no reason why you can't chuck that T-shirt on again. If you've gone down the gym or you've, you know, been out at a club all night, then maybe you're going to want to get that outfit in the washing basket and then into the washing machine pretty quickly.
Yes, I think the adjective you're looking to avoid is ripe here. step away from
exactly.
That. It's not good. We often see hotels saying if it's ecologically sound to do so, don't change your towels and sheets on a daily basis, or just leave them from that point of view. What's the accepted line, obviously, in an eco-sensitive world in which we live, for how often you should do things like towels, sheets and clothes and so on?
So when it comes to towels and sheets, it's probably best to get them in the washing machine every couple of weeks. So towels especially, you will definitely start to smell when they need a wash. You know, if you leave them and they're a bit damp, then they can start smelling of wet dog quite quickly. So you're going to want to avoid that happening, because it's horrible when you've gotten out of the shower and you're feeling nice and clean and then you wrap yourself in something that doesn't smell so great and you feel dirty again. And actually that clean sheet smell as well is is fantastic, and everyone loves going to bed when you've got clean sheets. And if you're feeling a bit homesick even, it can be one of those things that really just helps your student bedroom feel like your new home rather than just a room that you're staying in. So wash those every couple of weeks, but you absolutely don't need to be doing it on a daily basis.
And Hannah, given that you're from Brighton, and we have several students actually up in Lincoln from Brighton, including our very own Ben Lewis, who's clearly sort of focused on this thing, why is it that students find laundry one of the most daunting tasks to actually cope with that? Is it just a case of somehow there's something just mystical about those knobs and buttons that you actually see on the machine that you just think, I can't cope anymore?
Yeah, I think there's definitely something in that. I mean, I remember I don't think I'd actually embarrassingly fully used all of the buttons and knobs on my washing machine from home when I went to university. So yeah, I think actually it can look a little bit overwhelming, and actually it's a little bit mundane, isn't it? So there's going to be so many exciting things to do at university, coupled with, you know, all of your studies, all your lectures and reading lists and whatnot. Is it something that you really want to do? Do you really want to spend time going down the laundrette? That doesn't sound all that enjoyable to me either. But also, you know, people are worried, aren't they, around kind of putting the red sock in the whitewash and all that. That can create absolute
havoc. I mean, clearly we need to have a full series here with Do Your Laundry with Rachel and Hannah. You know, this is the way forward. I think we should sign the deals now and get it processed. Rachel, in terms of top tips for doing the laundry at university, what would you recommend with respect to obviously your hat as the Student Engagement Programme Officer at SERF?
So my top one, as Hannah just mentioned, is sort your colours separately from your whites and your darks. You do not want to be one of those 1 in 5 students who've already had that laundry disaster that they've dyed all of their clothes pink from one rogue red sock. And actually a really easy way to do this is, if you've got space, is have 3 laundry baskets in your room, and then you can sort them directly into colours before you even have to take them down to the laundrette and sort them there. So everything's already sorted for you. And another really key one is make sure you're not leaving your clothes sitting in the machine for a really long time after the cycle is finished, because all of that lovely fresh laundry smell you're going to get will just start turning into wet dog if you leave it in for too long. And also, you're living in shared accommodation. There might be quite a long queue of people who also want to get into the laundry room and do their laundry, and you don't want to be that person that's either hogging the machine or have someone, you know, take all of your clothes out for you and maybe leave them on the floor, which I know happened to me a couple of times before I got sharp to it when I started university.
Strategic planning, clearly. And the best place to go to for further information about what we've talked about today?
So if you search for SERF students on Cleanerpedia, you'll be sent to our student hub where you've got loads of hints, tips and hacks about how to do your laundry. And you can also sign up for some free SERF samples. So your first load of laundry at university will smell absolutely fantastic. And we'll even send you a coupon so you can get some money off your next purchase.
You know, I think that basically it's probably about the best bit of public service broadcasting this side of whatever, really. Truly awesome. Hannah Morrish from the UK's biggest university community, that's the Student Room, and Rachel Green from the Student Engagement Programme at SERF. Have you both enjoyed your time on the programme, and can we prevail upon you to return?
Oh, absolutely. We're happy to come back anytime.
We'd love to.
Personally, I don't feel you can beat programmes on laundry. I think forget darts, forget reality TV shows. We want more laundry on our TV screens, do we not, Ian Lennox?
Hello.
Yeah. So how are you, Ian? Good morning. And how's your laundry?
Okay, I'll just dump it into a machine and pull it out and hang it out.
It's strange because Ian,
it
always struck me as being somebody who would be a 3-basket person. I had a feeling that never, ever in the Lennox household would there ever been the remotest chance of the reds or the coloureds going in with the whites.
I have been known to develop a pink sheet.
Have you?
Yes, unfortunately. Only when in a rush, though, but when I've had lodgers in. I get taken lodgers from the theatres, you know. When 2 or 3 of them leave on the same day, I've got a great crush.
You've got to clean the blood off the sheets, and that can create all sorts of havoc, basically. You've got a bit of blood there, you try and get it out, it just gets worse. still, blood on the sheets, blood on the streets. Thought forward. Don't worry, Ian, at least Steve Bruce is now available to take over from Rafa Benito, so that's good news then, isn't it? You know, in a positive way. And Ben, obviously, a good result. I think we were sort of quite happy overall with a 2-0 victory for Man City against your side.
Well, actually, Brighton didn't play too badly, I don't think. And to be honest, we didn't expect to win, and I told you that on Saturday at the Open Day. We didn't, I didn't expect us to win.
Is he strutting about again?
Exactly. No, it's, yeah. And of course, curiously enough, another City actually also scored by 2-0 as well. That was Leicester City. They also had a 2-0 win, I believe, a side close to your own heart. Anyway, it's okay.
I saw Man City play in the European Champions
League. I'm glad you could. Obviously, you could afford to do so.
I watched Barcelona last night.
Yes.
Believe you me, there's very little comparison between the two teams and those two performances.
Well,
I tell you.
Yes, but then again, you could say the same about Newcastle United. And,
oh, we would forget about them. There's nothing going to happen at Newcastle until Ashley goes.
He keeps saying that as though he wasn't an Ashley fan. I can't believe this, but never mind.
Well, there's other stories coming out here about how Mansour is going to.
You said this last week.
Newcastle until Mr. Ashley put it.
Yeah, and he realised that it was just pointless. He
without Man City, yeah.
And now the new
team at the time, of course.
The new stadium would be called the House of Fraser Stadium.
Exactly. That's what we like to hear. All Devon.
You do live in a happy little world.
It's got a better ring to it than the Sports Direct one, I think.
Emma is now going into a catatonic state once again because we're talking about association football. And quite enough of such stuff. Emma, any questions you'd like to put to Ian Lennox about his work as a journalist or anything else, really? Or indeed, whether he likes his eggs scrambled, boiled, or fried?
Oh, yeah, how do you take your eggs? Are you a scrambled egg fan?
I like scrambled eggs, yes, I do. I like them on toast with the... I like the toast to be cold, so when I put the butter on, it doesn't melt. And it melts under the scrambled eggs.
How do you explain that one to the chef in a hotel?
I also usually have it with a little bit of tomato sauce as well.
Well,
coffee and
the tomato sauce.
And mushrooms and sausage and...
I can see that he's taken
this. Get round to the scrambled egg.
He's taken the scramble. In fact, that's the title of his next book. Obviously, my life with scrambled eggs.
Do you have brown sauce? You know, so the Newcastle brown ale sauce.
Not for scrambled eggs. I have tomato sauce.
Nuki brown sauce.
Definitely. It sounds amazing. You know, we've randomly gone through a whole range of other bits and pieces, and it almost it's been too much of a good thing, really. So, with the news approaching in a matter of seconds from now, it's almost time for us to put our last two questions to you, Ian. But before we do, what will you be doing over the next few days apart from considering and contemplating your scrambled eggs?
I'm going to try and do a little bit more writing. Mm-hmm. And I went up to Walkwood yesterday, so I might try and take another trip out somewhere.
Excellent. Do you find that
really, I have a very quiet life now, as you know.
Do you find that walking actually stimulates your synapses to effectively create more wondrous works? Or, in the words of the movie The Wife, is it simply a case of you trying to find some female to do all the writing for you and then pass it off as your own?
Usually I walk with some friends or relatives, and so we have a conversation. Mm. But I do walk on my own. I go on little daydreams, I think, really. Yes.
Well, one of these days we will actually do a location report
with
yourself.
It is a beautiful walking country
scientists.
Up here, you know.
Well, exactly so. And you've got to have something to actually kill the pain of being a supporter of the World Pass. It's true. Oh, wait. All will be well with the world, and I must admit,
could be a Sunderland fan, though. That's what you've got to think.
There we are. Or indeed Darlington, or possibly even Hartlepool these days.
You see, Alex, look at it like this. You and I are bored of success. I will be ecstatic where we ever get it.
Yeah, that's all part and parcel of the rich tapestry. Go on, Emma. Put those last two questions on the table.
Did you enjoy your time on the radio this morning?
I did indeed, but we must have a chat sometime because I never get a word in, do we?
And will you be joining us again soon?
I hope so, yes.
That's fantastic news. Go, Ian, go!
FM. Online. Siren Radio.
Wonderful. And the weather today, highs of 17 degrees centigrade, lows of 11 degrees centigrade, and it's going to be a day which has some light cloud with a moderate breeze. So we could ask for no more, quite frankly, other than maybe just a hint of George Harrison.
Give me that plenty of that guitar.
I've been traveling on a boat, in a plane, in a car, on a bike, with a bus and a train. Traveling there, traveling here, everywhere, in every gear. But oh Lord, we pay the price with the spin of a wheel, with the roll of the dice. Ah yeah, you pay your fare, and if you don't know where you're going, any road will take you.
the future through the space and the time. Traveling deep beneath the waves, in watery grottos and mountainous caves. But ah, Lord, we got to fight with the thoughts in the head, with the dark and the light. No use to stop and stare if you don't know where you're going. Any road will take you there. Skin of my teeth by the breath of her hair. Traveling where the fall winds blow, with the sun on my face in the ice and the snow. But ooh-wee, it's a game. Sometimes you're cool, sometimes you're lame. Ah, yeah, it's somewhere. If you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. The spin of the wheel with the roll of the dice. Ah, yeah, you pay your fare. If you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. I keep traveling around the bend. There was no beginning, there is no end. It wasn't born and never dies. There are no edges, there is no size. Don't win, it's so far out, the way out is in. Bow to God and call him sir, but if you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. And if you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. If you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there.
The sense of wonderment, the sheer worlds that actually reading actually opens us up to. And yet, many British folk are actually finding it far too busy to read at any other time of the year, except one on holiday, according to research commissioned by the Gibraltar Tourist Board. Why not then address this with a true genius, a legend in so many delightful ways? He's been responsible for the popularisation of mathematics through the ages. He is the awesomely talented Johnny Ball. How are you, Johnny?
Hello, is that me you're talking about?
Of course it is.
I was a bit over-pitched, but thank you very much. Thank you, Alex.
And I think the knighthood will be in the post and everything else will be sorted through, really.
I won't wear it.
No, it's great stuff. Now, listen, this particular aspect, Johnny, were you surprised by this survey from...
No, I'm not. I understand. I think when people are in there, you know, once you get married and you've got kids and you've got a career and, you know, and these days money is so tight, you've got to work so hard. Nobody... People don't play golf anymore. I was playing golf when I was 30. People don't play golf anymore. People are so busy getting on with their lives and getting their lives together. They don't have a lot of time for anything else. So I'm not surprised that people read less. But you know, you can find time for reading. And of course you do on holiday, but you can find time at other times. And I think the other thing is the thing that reading does, it broadens your mind, it really does, and that makes you, if you like, enriches your life in many directions, you know.
Well, I'm minded of the old phrase, what is this world so full of care, we have no time to stand and stare. Maybe we need to also have time to read, to actually have that opportunity in a screen-based culture where you can literally have thousands of texts on your portable device and so on.
All saying the same thing.
Oh, now there's a whole new debate we could actually have about echo chambers and such like. But in terms of that, it is time to maybe just take back to really invest in some of the thoughts of our ancestors, some of the thoughts not just of contemporary authors, but great writers across the ages, from your Dickens right the way through to your Mary. Yeah. We're celebrating 200 years of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein this year. Yeah. Without which, effectively, I wouldn't have probably had an interest in science fiction.
No, and she wouldn't have read it without the science and the discovery of the carbon arc. The carbon arc produced this incredible light, which was used in cinemas, you know, which illuminated cinemas for many years, this brilliant bright light. And that was it, when they realized they could pass power across a gap between two carbon rods, and bang, you got absolutely brilliant light. Had, you know, so it was the science that led her. And so she wasn't just amongst poets. She was always looking at the outside world, as poets do, you see. Poets look at the world in a wider spectrum. Otherwise, they can't say anything about it. They've got to look at it from every angle before they start getting an opinion on one thing or another and start formulating their poetry. So poets have got to be pretty well-read or very open-minded. And I don't think we have time to do that, you see. I think we're so intent with our careers often, and bringing up our kids and paying the mortgage and all that other thing. There are periods in our life when we don't have that much time. But the thing is, these days, I didn't go to university, and I think it was my saving grace. My daughter Zoe, she feels guilty she didn't go to university, and I said, it's your saving grace, because you haven't got corridor vision, because you haven't done a degree that took you down one corridor of learning. So you have a much wider aspect and look at life than I have.
It's always an interesting challenge in terms of when it's right to actually step into higher education to sort those things through. I've often said, if I were Minister of State for Higher Education, I might suggest that everybody took at least 1 year out before actually taking that leap to university, just to actually see a bit more of life.
I think that's the wrong end. I think you've got to do university and then do the gap year. Because you've got more. My son, one of my sons, did a gap year before university. In fact, he did it at 16, I think, you know, and it was fine. So he nearly got shot in Serbia, but
that's a little bit of a tense situation, I'd say. Yeah, it's not great,
got,
really.
They got hauled off a train and locked up on a station, and with other people, Americans, two Brits, two Americans. And the Americans said, we'll bribe them. And luckily, my son and his brother said, you don't do anything like that, you fool. Just keep calm. And then as they started to get accustomed to the room, they could see there were two people shackled to the radiator. Several hours later, a train came in going the other way. It was on a train station, came in going the other way. They'd been taken off the train, not allowed to pass through the area. And they were put back on the train and sent out. But, oh, God, it could have been so.
It's the kind of thing where possibly you need to keep calm and think of a number. Just a thought there.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll get serious. Yes, and think of a number.
Yeah, well, which is obviously a classic text, which clearly can raise so many wonderful things across the world. Interesting enough, from this survey, when we're talking about numbers, 75% of those who were surveyed wish that they actually read more. So there's clearly the desire to actually read more, which is great.
I think it comes around in your life. I think there are times when you can and times when you can't, and I think it's very important to do it. I was lucky when I went in the forces and I didn't have much of an education. My education was awful. But people started throwing, here, read this, it's Ernest Hemingway, read this, it's P.G. Woodhouse, read this, it's John Steinbeck, you know. And I was reading, so it's a whole, right, and that was my university. Not reading books on one subject, but reading books on all kinds of subjects, with all kinds of genres, you know, humour and tragedy and all kinds of things. So it was a very good schooling for me, you know. When I started writing my programs, you know, I was actually 39 before I wrote my first serious program, my first thing of a number, which wasn't serious, but it had serious content. It was factual, and it's 39 before I did that. So you've a long time to go, and we'll all have at least second careers and possibly third careers. Remember that these days. And there's chance to do it. There's chance to say, you know what, I wish I'd done. where there's chance to do it in your life and believe it. And reading is one way of getting you that way. You know?
It's the opening gatekeeper to opening up a whole range of things. Right. And when you bear in mind we've got probably, what, about 40,000 days that we actually spend on the planet, roughly around about 70, 80, well, 90 years or thereabouts. You know?
Like that. Well, hang on, I'm 18 now.
I know, yeah,
like,
so, I know.
So don't tell me I've only got four left.
You've got another 22,000 days at least to go through, Johnny. It's an important thing. Yeah,
I'll tell you one day that's very important. Now, I'll be in Gibraltar on the weekend of the 17th of November because it was a Gibraltar Literary Festival.
Indeed.
Who sponsored this survey. And I'm working for that. And just a minute, the BBC, that's down there as well. And lots of authors. Now, what we found, although people seem to say they have less time for reading, there are more people going to book festivals and literary festivals than ever. Not by a little, by a huge amount. 4, 5, 6 times more than, say, 15, 20 years ago. And it's very good. And look, 17th of November, just coming into winter and it's getting clammy and
it's
cold.
It's ideal to go down and see the monkeys.
What a weekend down there, see the monkeys and me.
Yep, you know, there you go.
Feed me more, better than you feed the monkeys, please. And go down there. It'll be a lovely time.
Well, we also have our regular correspondent each Thursday morning. She gives us the weather for Lincoln from Gibraltar. That's Gabriella Peralta. I'm sure she'll be keen to be there. She's working for the Gibraltar Chronicle as well as Siren Radio. So it's going to be awesome. With Johnny Ball there as well, it's just unmissable. And would you suggest, Johnny, that the best place to go to find out more details about what we've been chatting about today would be use the search engine to find out Gibraltar Literary Festival? And
I think so.
Things will work through there.
I'm certain. Fantastic. I certainly would. Yeah. Lovely. So, hello, Lincoln. I don't get up there enough, but I love the town. Really do.
Well, we need you out more, Johnny. That's the key thing, because when you bear in mind that George Boole emerged from Lincoln, and without Boolean logic, the world would... We wouldn't be doing this, let's face
Absolutely.
It. You know, it's a whole range of things there.
I didn't know that. I knew that he did a lot of his schooling in Ireland. I knew Boole.
Ah, yes, but he was born in Lincoln. Born actually...
You know, that had missed me. That had... Wonderful. You see, you learn something every day.
A few hundred yards from where the Siren Radio studios actually are at this particular moment in time. So there we are in the University of Lincoln as well. Johnny, two final questions for you. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us this morning?
That's been lovely. Very good, yeah.
So in which case, can we prevail upon you to join us again in the not-too-distant future and keep us appraised of life and times and more from your good perspective? Will you be kind enough to come
back? You know where I am. All you have to do is... You know, but forget how many days we've got to live.
No.
According to my calculation, I haven't got more than 2 or 3 left.
Time is just illusion.
That's not true.
Remember the Einstein quote, Johnny. The most persistent of illusions are that present, past and future are separate entities. We're all doing things simultaneously. So
that's very good. Yes. And another thing he said, which I have always taken as my maxim, if you can't explain it to a 7-year-old, you don't understand it yourself. And I think that was the loveliest thing. So when people say, but you wrote for children's television, I said, no, I didn't. I wrote for any audience. And all I did was make it clarify.
Jimmy, Jimmy. travel broadens the mind is very much to the fore when we start talking about where we should be heading in this fine planet of ours. And as the autumn weather begins to set, many of us are already dreaming of our next holiday or break. So why not actually focus on three fabulous continents with three fabulous guides to both Europe, Southeast Asia and South America. We're of course talking to three caballeros, three musketeers, of course. Gabo Candle, how are you, Gabo?
I'm so excited to hear your voice. Actually, your voice makes me be more excited than I am.
Oh, wow. That's wonderful. And Kim Hoon Folk from Southeast Asia. How are you, Kim Hoon?
I'm very, very good. Thank you, Alex.
Excellent. And from South American guide, the awesome Neil Rabjohn. How are you, Neil?
Very good. Nice to speak with you, Alex.
Excellent. Gabo, if we can come to you, we'll start off fairly close by Lincoln, at least, in terms of Europe. But this adventurous guide from that point of view, and research that was recently carried out for G-Adventures, are we becoming more adventurous as a nation, thinking, actually, yeah, what the hey, let's just go somewhere different?
Absolutely, Alex. We were doing some research here at G, and we find out that people really, really want to immerse in this local culture. Even though it's there, whatever it is in Europe, it's in Southeast Asia, or at Neil's region, which is Patagonia and South America. Now we're here because we want to actually inspire people to go immerse in these activities, and we have a great opportunity because winter is coming, right, quoting. And here we have a lot of great trips and a lot of great opportunities to, for example, visit in Romania for Halloween. We throw in a party in Transylvania at Dracula's Castle. What about that? You know that there are a lot of festivals in the wintertime. For example, the Venice Festival, which is a masquerade carnival, which is fantastic. And if you want to go and sunbathe in the shores of Sri Lanka, we can also really, really opt to a sailing trip.
Quite really awesome. Now, moving on from that, if we can turn to our South American guide, Neil. I mean, Neil, was it a case of you punched the sky and said, yes, it's not just Sergio Aguero and the rest of the fine team that actually lead to Argentina, but Argentina is the top destination for trips in winter?
Absolutely. We've got the sunshine. If people, if your listeners in LinkedIn are getting the winter blues, then we've got the sunshine down there. And to your point, yeah, people are looking for a little more adventure and something more memorable. There's definitely a time and place for laying on the beach in the sand, but people come home thinking, you know, I my mind wasn't really taken off the things at work. The best way to do that is immerse yourself into either a adrenaline adventure or a cultural immersion where you're doing something totally different. In Patagonia, we have unbelievable treks down there. For example, in El Chalten, we do the Fitzroy hike. It's 10 hours up and down, so it's not easy, but it's definitely not out of the realm of most people's ability. And it's just so rewarding as a guide to see people make it to the top of that. They might be a little more stoic in the first few kilometers, but when they get to the top and they see that stone castle up in the clouds before them with the ice and the mist, the tears start to flow on them and myself and the rest of the small group that's traveling with them as part of G-Adventure.
It seems to have almost replaced the traditional trip to Peru and Machu Picchu, which used to be flagged up and on most people's bucket lists. We need to check Peru out. Has Argentina just stepped in there with Patagonia?
Oh, absolutely. The idea that South America is really just Peru, and by all means, Peru is an unbelievable destination. We have, I think, 40 different tours that cross the country there, but there's so much cultural and geographic variety to South America, whether it's the glaciers and mountains of southern Patagonia or the rich wildlife of the Pantanal in western Brazil, the festivals, like it's cliche to say, but Carnival in Rio, it's happening end of January, early February, is something that must be experienced once in a lifetime. Colombia has amazing treks as well. So though South America, I know the board game Risk gives it very few little territories down in the bottom left-hand corner, but there is definitely a lot more going on there than just Peru, so it's worth a good closer look.
Now, I do know that some of our students were fortunate enough recently to head over to KDU Penang in Malaysia, and they came back with lots of exciting tales. We've also had some Malaysian students who've come over to the University of Lincoln. But northern Sri Lanka, obviously, there. I mean, from your own point of view, Kim Hoon, Southeast Asia, again, a very growing popular destination for holidaymakers.
Yeah, it's
like back there, it's like they have so sunny every time of the year. So yeah, it's like a winter over here. Why not to go to see those places, those sun? And then how about Angkor Wat? It's like the most beautiful sight. And hiking at Sapa is one of the cool ones as well. How about Ha Long Bay? So Vietnam is really, really good. And also, how about like go to cooking class in somewhere in Thailand? So which is like the most beautiful cooking class, and also in Vietnam and Cambodia as well. So the food is very good. So yes, it's all those things that we should heat it up to out from the winter over here. Just go to check it out another site.
Do you get the chance to actually sort of swap over? So, I mean, Gabo, will you sometimes sort of say, I'll swap with Neil this time around, I'll go to Argentina, you can actually do the authentic European Northern Lights trip, etc.? Or is it a case of, no, we stay with our territories?
That's all right. Even though I'm Argentinian, I've been working for G-Adventures for 4 years now in Europe, and I'm looking forward for the winter because we have, as you said, these fantastic tours that we hike and we had trains. We call it rail in Norway and the Northern Lights experience. And, well, of course, we cannot guarantee that the Northern Lights will be there when we are in Norway. But the tour is more like the experience of being there and seeing the fjords and seeing, hiking in the ice, if you want to. And also, it's also family-friendly because we are actually offering travel styles for family as well. There, up there in Norway.
But for us guides, yeah, there is the opportunity to do switches. And for this summer, for example, I was lucky enough to spend a few months in the high Arctic working on the G expedition up in Svalbard in Norway. We really love changing people's lives at G Adventures, and that also includes our own. So we're so well connected, us guides, that there's opportunity for exchanges. Maybe Kim will come down to Brazil with me, and then I'll head off to Cambodia and run a trip with him. There's a lot of great opportunities like that.
Actually, a funny fact, Alex, is that last year I was running a tour in my own country, in Argentina, and I met Neil for the first time doing the welcome meeting in the same hotel. And we didn't thought at that moment that we're going to be invited to the Wanderlust Guides Award tomorrow. So here we are.
It clearly shows that the Wanderlust Guides recognise quality. Now, as we approach, obviously, Thursday evening, that's when the winner's going to be crowned from that point of view. Clearly, just actually being listed is a tremendous success from that point of view. But are you looking forward to the event itself, gentlemen? Let's start off with Neil.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great honour. And what's really special about it is it's not just some arbitrary selection process, but rather it's the travelers who have been on tour with us, have written kind words and put their sort of nominations forward. And so I'm really, more than anything, I'm looking forward to seeing them. There's a number of them coming. Hi, guys, if you're listening. And just really looking forward to celebrating that and meeting the other amazing guides that are going to be recognized.
And Gabo, obviously no vampires, I don't think, will be present as far as the awards are concerned, but who knows what could happen with Transylvania?
Well, I'm not running this tour this year. Actually, I ran it last year, but I would recommend everybody to take an opportunity and go step into out their comfort zone. And promise there's no real vampires in there for people.
And finally, Kim, are you looking forward to the awards from your own perspective?
Yeah, I'm really excited to looking for that. But basically, I'm London is one of my dreams. So I won it already. I dream to come to London. It's one of the winners I expected because I always dream to come here. So yeah, it's like back there, it's like gonna be thank you. Be great honor to G Adventures, to also Wanderlust, and also the people who vote for me. So I'm just kind of looking for the thank you.
It's going to be awesome. It's of course the wonderful G Adventures place to go to. Any suggestion in terms of website you'd point our listener to actually go to find out more about G Adventures and some of the fabulous trips we've shared with you guys today?
Yeah, we've got a spectacular website. It's www.gadventures.co.uk. And it's very user-friendly. I encourage all your listeners to click through there. And if they're looking for somewhere to get away this winter,
then there's plenty of information that they can find there.
I'm sure it's only a matter of time before G-Adventure start offering lunar explorations and indeed probably trips to Mars, but we'll talk about that probably later in the century. Meanwhile, Gabo, Kim and Neil, have you all had a relatively interesting telephonic link with us? Have you guys enjoyed this little link with us on the programme today?
Absolutely. Thank you. And if I may, I wanted to say hi to Janet and Sarah from Lincoln. They were my travelers in the Best of Greece tour a couple of years ago.
Fantastic.
So Sarah, if you're listening.
Hey, this is brilliant stuff. So I take it then you'll all be kind enough to return, and hopefully we'll do another little feature when we find out the results. You will come back to us and speak with us again.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Gabo, Kim and Neil from G-Adventures, many thanks indeed, and keep travelling.
Yes.
Yeah, they will. They will indeed. And good luck to all three for the awards, which, of course, are this evening, including, of course, Janet and her friend from Lincoln. Whilst we're giving little shout-outs on Siren Radio, I believe that Mr. Street has a mention. So that would be the father of yourself, Emma. To
yes.
Give a little shout-out, to use the vernacular, to him.
Yeah, well, he should be at work now. So I don't know if he's listening anymore, but, you know.
Well,
he's caught in the act.
He could always check out the podcast, can't he? That's the important thing. We may be going to speak to William. Well, depends how long his conference call has taken. If not, we'll be having tremendous music and a final farewell after Casey Musgraves and Biscuits. Gabriella Peralta, Stephanie Romashevsky, Richard Fitzwilliams, Ian Lennox, Hannah Morrison, Rachel Green, Johnny Ball, and of course our fine tourist guides from G-Travel for all manner of wonderful things. Have you enjoyed your second little production of the Midweek Drive Morning Edition, Emma Street?
Yeah.
Yeah, I have. I really enjoyed it.
That's what we'd like to hear. We haven't given up on William just yet because I thought we can always wish him a birthday greeting on his voicemail message. I thought
it's his birthday today.
Well, it was like 2 days ago, so it's kind of it's in the zone. It's in the week. It's his birthday week if we're sort of looking for that. And if he, you know, obviously is looking at the equivalent of having a party time system, then you know, the least we can do is to hopefully provide that for him, really, Ben.
Yeah, we can do that. Yeah, I'm sure.
A little reminder, of course, this evening at 7 o'clock, it's Sound and Nick's Vision, which actually features your good self, Ben.
Things
and Sue Rice and various other things. So that's a whole heap of other goodies there. It's probably going to be an answer phone message, I would have thought. It's a way to actually see us out of the programme today. Or maybe he will pick up, who knows? You know, it's just dialing there and like some sort of quick.
Hi, this is William. Just a leave me a message and I'll call you back as soon as I can.
When you finish recording, please hang up or press the hash key for more options.
It's always very confusing. We'd just like to say, William, although you couldn't make us on the show today, a 1, 2, 3,
happy birthday,
William Sitwell. That's from
Ben
and
Emma.
And, of course, the entire Midweek Drive-Out team. We'll speak next week on scrambled egg territory and more, no doubt. Keep on keeping on and enjoy Thursday. And so another little happy soul has actually come to the end. We will wrap up now. Back again next week, Emma?
Yeah.
And actually also back for Royal Radio,
we'll
be producing, which also will be going out. So that's the new Lincoln Theatre Royal. So lots of great stuff coming through, including, of course, Chris Clarkson's Drive Time as well between 5 and 7. Can we say farewell?
Farewell.
Farewell.